Hi, this is Bill Indicky for the Streets.mn podcast, conversations about transportation, public space, and urban design in the Twin Cities. The podcast this week is a conversation with Johnny Howard, a longtime neighborhood organizer who's running for city council in St. Paul's Ward 1. I've already interviewed two candidates for the open seat in Ward 1 on this podcast, but Johnny Howard is the only one who has experience running in the race, having challenged incumbent Melvin Carter 4 years ago. Howard has the Green Party endorsement, and he's a retired auto worker and the founder of the Thomas Dale Block Club, which has long been an important social institution in the Frogtown neighborhood along University. We sat down a few weeks ago at the Daily Diner on the corner of Dale and University to talk about the history of the neighborhood, about affordable housing and transit, and why good-paying jobs are the key to the future of St. Paul. Before I play the tape, though, consider giving a donation to streets.mn. We're 100% volunteer-run website, and anything you can give us would help keep the page running and operational. For example, as you might have noticed, the site has been going offline lately. It's because we're getting a lot of traffic, but it probably means that we're actually going to have to start paying for our site hosting, like paying actual money. So to that end, any help would be greatly appreciated, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. Great. Well, let's just start then. Welcome to the podcast. I'm here with Johnny Howard, who's running for city council in Ward 1 in St. Paul. We're sitting at the Frogtown, no, the Daily Diner.
It's a Daily Diner in Frogtown.
Yeah, in Frogtown, on the corner of Dale and University. And this is like a new building. How old is this building?
The building is about 3-4 years old.
Yeah.
The restaurant opened up this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's actually kind of neat because we're in this big window of the whole corner, like opening up behind us here, and it's a nice little friendly place.
Yeah. It is.
So, Johnny, you're running for city council. There's this kind of a surprise race this year.
Right.
Because the incumbent, Melvin Carter, took a job that pays a lot more, and seems like something he's really excited about doing with the Department of Education. So that leaves a vacancy in Ward 1, and it's an open race. Yeah. And you ran previously, so tell us about you and why you're running for city council.
Well, I am. I'm Johnny Howard. I'm running for the city council because I love this city. I not only love this city, I love this geographic part of the city. I love Ward 1. I live in the Frogtown neighborhood, and I've been living in Frogtown for 30 years. So I'm 58, so you may as well say I grew up in Frogtown. Now, if we go back 5 years ago, this wasn't called Frogtown. It's the Thomas Dale neighborhood. And from Dale to Western, University of Thomas was considered Frogtown. During those days, Frogtown, Thomas Dale, was probably one of the worst parts of the neighborhood, one of the worst parts of the city. If there was a shooting, if there was a drug bust, if there was a rape, it was a stabbing, it was a murder. It was in this part of the city, right in this neighborhood. This restaurant we're sitting in, it used to be from a strip club, and across the street on both corners were pornographic theaters. But this used to be one of the worst corners in the city. In 1990, I worked as an intern for former city council president Bill Wilson. While doing that work, I got to take a look at this neighborhood while living in it, and what we saw was a neighborhood that's truly being treated bad. We had drug houses on every other block. This is where prostitution had made its home. This is where crime had made its home up and down University Avenue, where this great light rail sits right now. You know, people were being charged to walk down Grotto Street. So what we did, I created an organization called the Thomas Dale Block Club. Our mission was to develop a sense of pride in the neighborhood. And so we did that because if you're not proud of where you live, if you don't love where you live, you're not going to take care of it. And so we created that. And so I could talk about that a long time, but that's me. I just love to work with people. And we had the opportunity to change this neighborhood. And I just was blessed to be at the head of the table, at the lead, at the beginning of this change. I like to tell people I love Frogtown when it wasn't popular.
Yeah, you liked it before it was cool?
Yeah. You know, we when we took back Grotto, We put everybody in t-shirts that said Frogtown Power, Frogtown Pride.
You know, that's a common thing that I hear North Minneapolis and the east side of St. Paul about negative press, you know, or even when I was teaching a class at the U about Sub-Saharan Africa, I showed a documentary about Uganda, and it was a kind of a bleak picture, and I had a colleague of mine who's from Uganda, and he said, this is really, I don't like this movie because I really love where I live, I love my country, and I think that so often you get these negative stereotypes about places that have poverty, right? And so, yeah, I think that's the idea of having a positive message and having pride in where you live that is, you know, kind of that, important. But it's hard to build when you get negative stories all the time about a certain part of the city or whatever. People stereotype about a geographic area.
You have to be intentional about your work. You have to really be intentional about your work. So we did that. I'm going to just talk about this for a moment. We put people in t-shirts that said Frogtown Power, Frogtown Pride, and we took that street back. Now, all the time, every time you pick up the paper, you're reading something negative about the neighborhood. We had two failing rec centers, their football programs were failing. And so what we did, my wife and I, we put together the money, and we took West Minnehaha and Shepherd, brought them together and created what we called the Frogtown Football Program. That was intentional in choosing the name, because if your child come home, they got a t-shirt on that says Frogtown Football, or a jersey that says Frogtown Football, no matter what you read negative, your baby got Frogtown across his chest. And so we had already put the parents in t-shirts that said Frogtown Power, Frogtown Pride. And in 1992, we didn't have a business organization in this neighborhood. I'm one of the founding members of what I call the Frogtown Action Alliance. And so that was our business incubator. We didn't have a housing group in our neighborhood. I'm one of the founding members of the Greater Frogtown Community Development Corporation. And so what we did, we took that negative and we turned it into a positive. So for 3 years, we gave every member a Christmas gift. We gave them a coffee mug that said Frogtown Power, Frogtown Pride. And now you look at this neighborhood, it's not Thomas Dale anymore, it's the Frogtown Neighborhood Association. So I like to think we had a little something to do with that.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, my parents took me to the Frogtown Diner. Do you remember that place a couple times?
Clark Armstead.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I don't remember where it was. I was pretty young.
Yeah, about four blocks down on University. Clark Armstead, the former owner of Clark Submarine, opened that up.
Yeah, and it was kind of, I just remember, like, because I'm from the suburbs south of here in Golden Heights, which is kind of a wealthy suburb, and just it was like kind of exciting to come down here.
Yeah.
And my parents were nervous the whole time.
And you're loving it.
But I liked it. Yeah, it was really, it was like a thrill of an adventure.
Yeah.
And now I live pretty close to here for 7 years, and it's a whole different feeling now. Actually being in a place as opposed to just going through it and visiting it once in a while.
Right.
But what would you do? What kind of things can the city and the city council do to kind of, the neighborhood's changed a lot since what you were talking about, right? There's still issues here, right? But what can the city do to improve quality of life in this ward?
We build on what we started years ago, and that's having pride. That's being concerned about the quality of life, you know, about the quality of life for people in the neighborhood. We build on that. See, without pride, without hope, you know, without loving your neighborhood, we don't go anywhere. If you look at this train rolling down the middle of our street, it's going to be great. It looks good. It's going to be a great thing once it's up and running. And it's nothing we can do about the process that took place, which I don't think was a good planning process, because I think if you're really going to plan for a neighborhood, you had the neighbors at the table at the beginning of the conversation, throughout the conversation. But in the beginning, we didn't have enough neighbors at the table helping to design how this thing is going to look, how it's going to affect this neighborhood. But that's all right. It's here now. And so now we got to do intentional planning on how parking is going to affect our neighborhoods. We got to do intentional planning to say what businesses are going to come in and how will they support this neighborhood and how will the neighborhood support those businesses. And so we got to be intentional of making light rail work for Ward 1. Of course, we got to take a look at this entire city, because we got people that can roll from Minneapolis and the Mall of America and come on downtown St. Paul. But we got to focus on how does this thing benefit Ward 1. And right now, I don't know if I see where it's going to benefit us. It certainly didn't benefit us during the building of it. Now, operating it, how do we make sure that the businesses that survive this can survive? How do we make sure that we attract businesses that's not just going to be open for a year or two, that's going to be long-term businesses? So we got to have intentional conversations on what type of businesses do you want in this neighborhood. I don't really see people coming from Edina or Anoka to come visit Frogtown. I just don't see that. And so we got to make sure we have businesses that our local people can come to and shop. And that's just the reality. If you got a choice to go to the Mall of America or go to the Unidale Mall, you're going to go to the Mall of America. And that's just... I mean, I can afford it. But that's the reality, is that we got to create businesses that the neighborhood can help sustain. And so we got to do good planning to do that.
What kind of steps can you do? What can a city do to cultivate certain kinds of businesses? Like what?
We got to give incentives to encourage smaller businesses to come on in. So we got to give incentives to get them in, and then you know, they say buy America, keep America working. We got to shop locally. We got to encourage people to shop locally and support this avenue. We need these businesses because they help control our property taxes. So empty buildings don't pay good taxes. So we want to fill up every shop in this, on this avenue. And so we got to encourage neighbors to support the businesses along the avenue.
Another thing I've heard is that local businesses keep more money in the neighborhood. Have you heard that too?
It turns around at least 20 times when you... if you shop here in the neighborhood for the local businesses, it turns around quite a few times. Whereas when we have our big box stores, you spend it and it's gone.
Yeah, and that's one of the frustrations with me with the neighborhood, this ward over on the west side, is that everyone does shop at the Rainbow and the Walmart and the Target, but you know, I don't know. I don't think they have the same neighborhood impact if you shop at the Unidale, like you were saying, or whatever.
Yeah, and I do. We really got to try to... promote and push local businesses to grow. And then I look at University Avenue, and 90% of the businesses are Asian-owned businesses. I so much want to see some African-Americans open up shops and open up businesses. Did you want to order something?
No, I'm good. Thanks. Just water for now.
You know, so I want to see the opportunity for African Americans. They used to have quite a few businesses along this strip.
What are the barriers to that right now, I think?
I think economics. The city back in 1984-85, they actually had a department in the city. They gave out little small loans to businesses in the city. We need to look at doing that again. We got our Midtown Business Center. They do training for entrepreneurs, and we got to do training like that. We got to help find startup funds and incubators, so that startup businesses can, you know, learn how they need help. And so we got to give them the tools they need to develop their businesses.
You mentioned parking. What are your thoughts on that? About what the role of parking is
in
University Avenue and getting small businesses to be viable here.
This is one of the things that bothered me 2 years ago and prior to when we planned light rail. Before we brought the first bulldozer in, there should have been a parking plan. Before we broke ground, there should have been a parking plan, and it wasn't. Now what we got to look at is, if you are a neighbor on Sherburn, if you are a neighbor on Aurora, if we do get our businesses going, where will the customers park? On Sherburn and on Aurora. And that's going to create the problems they had on Grand Avenue, is that neighbors come home and they can't park in front of their homes. So then comes permit parking. And with permit parking come the headache of permit parking.
Oh, it's a real headache.
How do I get my permit? How many permits can I get? On a weekend, how do I get my permits?
What do I do if I want to have people over?
Absolutely. That should have been taken care of and thought about in part of the initial conversation with light rail. And that's where I think we missed the boat. Good leaders listen, then act. Good leaders, is your responsibility to take a look at the bigger picture. This is going to look great, but how is it going to affect the people I represent? It's great that we're going down there and the Union Depot looks great, but right now, how is this going to affect my neighbors on Sherburne, on Fuller, on Aurora, on Charles? That's going to deal with the overflow if the businesses start to grow. Those are things we got to talk about. All deliveries are going to be in the alleys. Right now, we ought to be talking about what time of day will the deliveries take place. How would the delivery trucks come into the alleys, and you got neighbors sharing those alleys, they got to get up and go to work, got to get up and go to school. Those are day one conversations that didn't happen that we got to make sure we make happen before 2014 get here. We got to take in consideration our neighbors.
Yeah, I agree with you. Especially trucks in the alleys, man, yeah. Because usually truck drivers want to do their deliveries in the middle of the night because there's no traffic, you know,
right.
It's more efficient. But, yeah, if you live next to it.
And you don't want to hear it,
yeah.
You know. And again.
I have a friend who has a house on Sherburne, actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're going to catch it.
His backyard goes right up to the alley behind. It's over that way about a mile.
Okay. Yeah. You know, and like I say, light rail, I mean, you just look out there, it looks great. And,
there's nothing on there. Yeah, it's just true.
I mean, just the design looks good, and it's going to be nice to look at. But we got to make sure that Ward 1 people, as good as it looks, it should be good to Ward 1. And I'm comfortable saying that I want the whole city to do great, but my focus is for Ward 1 people to survive this thing and thrive with it and to grow with it.
You know, I've actually had some conversations with politicians and prospective politicians in St. Paul a few times about too much money and economic development, like attention going to the downtown area and neglecting other parts of the city. Or maybe downtown and, you know, the sort of southwest part of the city and not necessarily where I live or in this part of the city or the north end or the east side. Do you feel like that's true?
I wish I could identify some money that came to, not through. I wish I could identify some money that came to Ward 1 in the last 6 years.
That library is an example, right?
Well, that library, my God. I'm glad it's there. I hate the design. But
it is kind of ugly. I agree with you about that. It's just a box, man. I could have you drawn boxes on your little notepad. That's
yeah,
what it looks
yeah.
like to me.
You know, and so... We need, of course, I'm glad that the Penfield is going up. I like the idea. I don't like the money spent on the same stadium. No sense of me trying to tell you that I do. I think that money could have been built, keeping our rec centers open on the weekend. I think that money could have been spent putting some music classes and art classes and some other than ball bouncing in our rec centers. And so I'm not happy about those city dollars being spent there. But we need to look at how do we encourage money and development to take place in Ward 1. And it hasn't been enough, far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. What would be, like, your best-case scenario? What would you like to see? Like, what would be a development project that would really change the neighborhood for the better?
Oh, I think that we should take a look at the West Minnehaha site, and it needs to be remodeled.
Oh, yeah.
It could grow, and it could be. We got 10 acres of land there that we should grow, but grow it with an intentional plan to make it neighborhood friendly. I don't want it to be a rental center. I don't want to build this great facility and it's rented out to teams from outside the ward or people from outside the ward. I want it to stay a neighborhood center. But that's one thing we could do is rebuild that center.
Yeah, that place now, it's like a vacant lot, giant parking lot, old bowling alley falling apart. It's pretty eyesore. Right,
you know, it's terrible. You look at Frogtown Farms coming in, which is a great, great project, you know, but, you know, here's the deal. The city did a study years ago, what they identified, what there's a gap in green space in the ward. Now, here's what the problem was. The city did the study, and they did nothing with the study. It was neighbors, Anthony Smiths, Patty Onums, Satu Jones, and Soyini Guiding that led the charge, led the fight, kept on pushing, kept on fighting until they got it on the agenda. Now, what people don't know, no criticism of our city officials, but they didn't get on board until the neighbors had did all the work.
That's often how things happen. Like,
and that's too bad.
The Midtown Greenway in Minneapolis is a similar story, you know, where it takes a lot of people getting organized and active and calling politicians to make things happen, right?
Yeah, and they don't hear you until you get all the work done.
Yeah.
And then they put their names on the top of it.
Yeah, well, that's going to be you if you get elected.
No, it won't. You know, I ran an organization for 16 years, and I believe in, on my literature, it say listening, leading, and putting people first. Everything I do, we're going to make sure we sit and work with the people and try to and make sure that we had the people's input, values, and ideas heard.
So I, one of my friends is a city council member up in Ward 5, and she does kind of a office hours up on Ray Street, I think once every 2 weeks or something. Is that kind of thing you'd like to do?
You know, right now, I'm at one of the coffee shops every Friday, and I'll continue to have meeting locations once I'm in office. When I ran my organization, I had hours set up 3 different times a week, so any neighbor that wanted to talk to me directly, if I could make it to the house, they knew where I'd be. If you don't know the people, how are you going to represent them? I've been working and organizing in this neighborhood for 30-plus years, and I'll continue to do that. Listening, leading, and putting people first. Good leaders listen, then act, and that's the problem I see within city, that some politicians forget that you're public servants. You said you want to work for the people. It's not your idea, it's the people's idea.
You have the Green Party endorsement, Johnny?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, tell me about that.
You know, I sought the DFL endorsement. I mean, I'm 58 years old, and I've always been a Democrat, going to stay a Democrat, and I support the Democratic process. But I look at the Green Party's philosophy is that why shouldn't we have a safer, a more comfortable environment? Why shouldn't we be greener? We're on borrowed time. This land is for my grandbabies. This neighborhood is for my grandchildren. And so we got to preserve that. But the Green Party said the same thing I said. We got to lead by listening, and all people should be treated with dignity and with respect. You know, and so I support that party and their efforts. You look at issues such as Ike Mill Road. 49 years, people have been talking about that issue. It's been a nice conversation. Somebody needs to make a decision, and I'll make a decision. It's been 49 years of conversation.
What decision are you going to make?
I look at it like this. You know, I've looked at some of the plans. I really think that the problem with Ike Mill Road is people coming from the suburb are trying to find their quickest way to get out of St. Paul and to go somewhere else. I think I like the conversation on one lane of traffic in both ways. I'll go back and make sure the neighbors are still saying that, but you look at one lane of traffic going both directions with a bike trail, with some parks in there, slow that traffic down so it's more beneficial to stay on the freeway if you got somewhere to go. I think that's one of the best options out there, is just to clean it up, dress it up, and slow it down so that the neighbors live there can enjoy it.
Well, I completely agree with you there, Johnny. Yeah. I'd actually like to see it closed completely, but I've talked to city engineers about that, and they're not too thrilled about my idea.
Yeah,
but
slow it down.
Yeah.
And that's the decision
like the
I
river
have.
Road. If you go to the River Road, look at how it is. That's what I like to see.
And families can enjoy that.
Yeah.
And it's about those families that live in that geographic area, but they've been studied. They've been studied, and every council member, they've been talking about it. Let's do something. Mm-hmm. And that's my style. I don't like all that talk. Let's get some work done.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about Charles Avenue. So you mentioned bike trails. So one of my favorite projects in St. Paul's past in the last couple of years is this Charles Avenue Bike Boulevard. Did you around for that? Did you part of the discussion for that?
I got to play with the little maps they put up on the little streets and put my little ideas on the sheets. And I just think that's an excellent idea. You know, now let's be real clear. Everybody's not going to ride a bike.
Oh, yeah,
I know. You got some folks 12 months a year going to be on their bikes, but it's good for the city. It's healthy for our people, and it's the wave that's coming. People are going to start biking more as it comes. We can't shove it, but the neighbors along that street, most of the neighbors along that street have agreed to it, and they like it, and so I think it's a good move.
Yeah, I look at, so right out the window, we can see the Nice Ride station, these green bikes, you know, right on Dale Street, but the problem is that this street, Dale Street, is like a nightmare for traffic and people going really fast down it, and I wouldn't put anybody on a bike and put them on Dale Street.
It's going to be hard to cross, especially once the light rail gets to going. I think it's going to be even more challenging. And you know, we got to put safety up front. When we design this stuff, we got to keep our children and our seniors on the table. We got to make sure we don't forget about them when we design anything, especially our bike trails. Our children are going to use them. Some of our older folks are going to use them, and their reflexes aren't what they used to be.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm curious what you think about this, Johnny, but I've had this thought in my head now about how traffic calming, you know, slowing cars down and making streets safer and calmer and quieter seems to happen a lot in neighborhoods that are really nice and not necessarily in places that are a little more run down or don't have as much money. For example, Dale Street is a good example, right? So you go look at south of 94, right? Mm-hmm. What happens to Dale Street? It kind of turns into two lanes. It's a lot slower. You know, the sidewalks are nicer. Mm-hmm. Up here, though, in this stretch, it's four-laner with the turn lane in the middle. Traffic goes probably 10, 15 miles an hour faster.
You know, one of the problems, here's another thing. I truly is on the top. I'm going to be on my first week. We're going to look at our district council systems. When George Latimer brought in the district council concept, there's no way a city council member can truly look at the entire ward. The district councils were put together to be a voice from the neighborhood to the council member. Our district council systems need to be rebuilt, strengthened, and re-educated. It's those neighbors that live in geographic parts of the city that ought to take a look and say, this is too slow, this is too fast. And we got to make sure neighbors know what we talk about when we say traffic calming. We got to have open public conversations. Sometimes people just don't know. And to me, it would be my job to help educate people.
Yeah, okay. One of my favorite places when I lived pretty close to here was Molina's Sports Bar. Do you know about that place?
It's two houses from me.
Yeah.
It's two doors down.
Anyway, it was a great bar, and I was friends with Vaughn, who got shot there a few months ago. That was really sad for me. And then there's, I don't know, so what do you do about crime? Because it's not completely gone away.
Right.
It's not as bad as it was when you were here 20 years ago. But
You know, here's what we do. First of all, education is the key to everything we do. We got to make sure that we have public conversations around public safety and begin to talk about family values and what our family values. We got to make sure that parents are comfortable talking about these things in their homes. Rather than bullets, our kids need books. Rather than jail cells, we got to start talking about classrooms. And we got to have neighborhood conversations like that. Now, let's be real clear. I'm running for the city council, not the school board.
I was going to ask you that, man.
Now, when your child walk out the door, from your door to the school door, I think it's a council member's responsibility. We got educated and paid people inside the schools to educate our children. The council member should address the opportunity gap. We should make sure that mama and daddy got a good paying job so they can get off work and not go back to work. Get off work and volunteer at the rec center. Get off work and go visit the school. If mothers and fathers have more time to focus with their kids, that's going to begin to address the achievement gap. They said you can't teach a hungry child. I believe if you get a kid come out of a neighborhood that's not safe, that's loud, that's crazy, that kid is going to be harder to teach. You get a kid come out of a household that everybody's yelling, that kid is going to go to school yelling. The council member can address the opportunity gap to make sure that every neighborhood is safe, that every neighborhood is peaceful, and that work toward having everybody get toward a livable wage. That's how you begin to address the achievement gap as a council member, is to make equal opportunities for survival, the quality of life of people in the world.
So you're a fan of the St. Paul Livable Wage Ordinance?
Look, I wish I could get me a T-shirt that just says it. We got to get there.
You probably get that T-shirt.
Well, we got to get there. I mean, I'm a 30-plus year union member. You know, I've been a member of the UAW since 1974. And so I understand, I respect unions. I've had the opportunity to make a decent wage so I could afford to give my children or send them or take them wherever they needed to go. If you're making $7, $8, $10 an hour and you got a rent and you got a house note to pay, you're suffering. We got to get those wages up. And that's going to begin to address that achievement gap. And we got to get people with better wages.
You know, it's one of these things that it's really hard for a city to do that all by itself. And I really wish the state had passed a minimum wage increase this year. Because then St. Paul doesn't have to compete with the next city down the road
right. In
terms of having where business is going to locate, right?
See, you hit that, and it takes courage to do that. But for St. Paul to compete, we not only got to give tax breaks to the employers and give incentives for businesses to come in, it got to be a city that they want to drive through. It got to be a city they might want to live in. So we need decent parks. We need these bike paths. We got to make St. Paul so attractive that businesses want to come here.
Yeah, well, I think it is. You know, I like St. Paul, too. I think so often, man, I talk to people, and they live here, and they just resent St. Paul, or they're pissed off about it all the time. And I'm like, it's a nice place.
I've been here 30 years, and I mean, I made a decent wage at the Ford plant. I could have chose to live anywhere I wanted to live, and I've been right here in Frogtown for 30 years. I'm not going anywhere.
So you worked in the Ford plant?
I did. I retired in 2006.
Oh, what was that like in there?
I was an inspector. It was a great job.
Yeah.
But you know, it was a good, earnest living. You know what I mean? Where you know, people, we came to work and we did our jobs, but it was good wages. It was hard work, but that's what America was built on, hard work.
Yeah.
You know, it was built on hard work. And everybody should have the opportunity to go to work. We got to do job training. We got to prepare our workforce for the next few years. We got to start training people. We got to train electricians. We got to train doctors. We got to train the math. They call it STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. We got to begin to have those conversations at the dinner table. Not at school, at the dinner table. See, people thought I was opposed to the Promised Neighborhood. I just thought it was a broken promise. And I think the federal government must have felt the same thing. They didn't fund it. I don't think it takes money to address education at home.
Tell me more about that Promised Neighborhood situation.
I just didn't see where it came from, the neighborhood. It seemed like the thoughts was coming from up above and coming down to the neighborhood, and I think ideas should come from the neighborhood out. If we want to address education in our communities, it starts at the dinner table. And don't take money to do that. You're eating dinner anyway. Let's talk about how did you do in school. It doesn't take money to say, read to me. Oh, read to your child. That doesn't take money. That's a public conversation, and that don't take money. It's parents being parents again. It's children being children again. It's really just creating a quality of life in this neighborhood that every block should be peaceful. You should come home. There's no trash in front of your home. Don't train your children to walk over trash. Pick it up. It's just that simple. Read to your child. Have your child read to you. Dream with your child and ask your child what their dreams are.
A a lot of these things seem like things that the city isn't really going to be doing itself. Like, so you're not going to hire someone to go around picking up trash. Saying to people, you need to change mentalities and attitudes.
Right. That's what we did with the block club. And we went out there, we said to neighbors, you know, I wrote this article. I ought to get you a copy of it. It was entitled, How to Build a Successful Ghetto. And I gave a step-by-step process on how to build a ghetto. And we gave that out to our neighbors. Now, we came back with how to build a safe, a successful neighborhood. But first, we pointed out to them that as you don't cut your grass, you're wrong. If you allow your children to walk over trash, then they're going to begin to throw trash. Take care of what you got. Our ward, we're the number one ward in the city. We ought to act like it. That's why, whether people vote for Johnny Howard or not, we need the strongest voting block in the city of St. Paul. Ward 1 ought to be. I think everybody ought to vote for Johnny Howard. But we need to. 17,000 people didn't vote last time.
The turnout at city elections is so low and surprising.
But that's where your life is dictated. I mean, with all the things happening in Washington, it's the local politics that create and design your quality of life, how you live. And 17,000 people didn't vote. And I take some responsibility for that. I didn't get the message out good enough. I'll do better this time.
I don't blame you completely, Johnny.
Well, I should have did better.
There's two more things I wanted to ask you about. Okay. One was the idea about affordable housing, making sure that people don't get priced out of their neighborhood, especially with the changes that might come with this train. It's being any day now is going to start tooting around here. Do you think we've been doing enough to do make sure affordable housing is in Ward 1?
We got to do better and we got to do more, you know, and we got to have public conversations about what is affordable housing.
What is affordable housing?
What is affordable housing? It's not subsidized housing. I think affordable housing is on your income. You can afford your house note. On your income, you can afford to rent. And so we got to look at being creative enough. Our community development corporations, our nonprofit community development corporations, ought to be looking at rental property and not making a profit, creating affordable rental property. Our community development corporations ought to be becoming landlords, helping to create affordable housing. I think we ought to look at contract for deed programs. I think we ought to look at land trust programs.
Yeah, I was going to say land trusts are an interesting idea.
They're great. But we got to do programs like that. And we got to do programs like that to make sure that people on your income, I'm making $13 an hour, I'm making $15 an hour. Help me create a program that a person making that type of salary can be comfortable in paying their rent, can be comfortable paying their house note. The Mural Affordable Housing Program hasn't been used in years. That's where your house note is based on your income. As your income go up, your mortgage go up. It go down, your mortgage go down. That's a good program. The land trust, it gives people, it takes the taxes out of the equation. We got to be creative in the way we put people in the housing. Contract for deed programs, where we get people starting all over again. It's a rent. It's a lease, and so your credit shouldn't be that much of a factor in that. We got to be creative in how we get people back. We got homeless people, you know, in empty houses. We got to marry the two.
Yeah.
We got to bring the two together. So being creative in the way we do it. I got a friend that says this, the best social service program in the world is a job.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I'm going to be fighting for, is to identify people that can hire Ward 1 people.
Tell me about transit. That's another big expense that people have. It's transportation costs, especially if you're not making a lot of money. You know, you can pay up more than a third of your income and getting around, keeping your car running, and maybe having more than one car, for, you know, if you need to.
Yeah.
Families, I mean.
We're going to have to take our time with public. You know, we're changing a mindset. You know, we're changing the way people grew up. You know what I mean? The way people grew up, everybody grew up driving 2 and 3 cars a household. That's changing. We can't make the change. The people got to make the change, and we can't rush it. We got to let it take its time. I think that public transportation, this light rail thing, I think it's going to become bigger. I think it's going to grow. But we got to take our time with it. We just can't shove it on people, and we got to design it properly. We got to make sure that we remember to pay for this avenue. They got to build up. When I say build up, you're going to have these businesses downstairs, but if you don't have housing above it, how are you going to pay for the building? And the problem with that, and it's where we're going to have to go, is that as much as we think and hope people ride this train, everybody's going to buy at least one car. But they got to park them somewhere. If they have guests, they got to park somewhere. And those are realities we got to look at. How do we create and build this so that it complements the neighborhood? We don't want seas of cement parking lots, but we also don't want people parked all on top of each other. You know, blocks so crowded that you can't have company. You know, you got company coming over and they can't park anywhere near your home. So we got to be thoughtful as we build these high rises. Where are the people going to park their vehicles and where will their guests park? All that has to be taken in consideration. And then as we build these tall buildings, we got to have green space in mind when we build them. And we don't want to take the sunlight away from all our neighbors too.
So yeah, so this the library across the street again, I'll just talk about it again, but like, you don't like that building?
I think they were asleep and they just said, let's just throw something together.
Yeah.
Let's just go straight up. Let's don't worry about where we're going to put the entrance at. You know what I mean? Let's not worry. I think it was just sleep, you know, when they designed
it. So what kind of development would you want to see then?
Well, this design is great. It steps back.
Yeah.
It steps back and it fits. The parking is in the rear, but it's parking here. You know what I mean? It steps back. You got to have people in the mind when you design buildings like this. You got to have the neighborhood in mind. We want to make sure the business has space to do what they need to do, but people have to drive past this every day, and it should look good, and it should feel good. This looks good. It feels good. This whole design, that's really ugly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they need to step back and step up.
Okay. Cool, Johnny. That's about all the questions I had. I was curious how your campaign's going and what you're doing these days and what are you going to do till November?
Well, the campaign is going great. I look at 3,500 people voted 2 years ago. I picked up 1,010 votes. I'm hoping that those people come back to Johnny Howard. I took 48% of the second vote. I hope that those people vote Johnny Howard number one. We're door knocking hard. We've been door knocking the past 2 months, and we're going to continue door knocking. And the message I hope people get is this. I'm not a community organizer. I'm a neighborhood organizer who's had the opportunity to work with every community in this city. And I've been working for 30 years trying to make a difference, trying to make Ward 1 a better place for to live and raise your families. I know that whoever represents this ward has to be able to walk down Summit and up front and be just as comfortable. We got to work when my shirt says Ward 1 for everyone. I've worked with everybody in this neighborhood, and I'll continue to do that, make Ward 1 a better place for all people.
All right, Johnny, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Streets.mn podcast. If you have any feedback or ideas, you can comment on Streets.mn, on Twitter at StreetsMN, or you can email me at blindakey@gmail.com. So long from Frogtown.